Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, and brought to you from the nation's busiest railway station, Waterloo. Well, David, I think it's the busiest in terms of passenger volume, and okay, not in terms of rail traffic.
Right, this is going to be one of those podcasts where I learn stuff, isn't it? I learnt about International Happiness Day a week ago, and now I know about Waterloo being the busiest train station in the UK.
Do you know which is the busiest in terms of rail traffic?
No.
Do you want to take a guess?
Euston.
Oh, come on.
St Pancras.
It's Clapham Junction.
All right, fine.
Train every 13 seconds in peak times. We're at Waterloo Station.
Tennis Podcast listeners, turn it off in droves.
Bringing you all the info about railways and a bit of tennis here and there.
There's loads of tennis.
Mostly this will be a railway-themed tennis podcast. David, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. There's loads and loads and loads of tennis to talk about this week because Miami's on. Andy Murray's out. He's got an elbow problem. We're going to be talking all about that. Loads and loads of matches to talk about.
I'm presenting.
I haven't finished yet. And Catherine Whittaker, before we get on to any of that, the reason I've just completely sabotaged your presenting of the podcast is to draw attention to the fact that Catherine, for the first time in the 5 years that we've been presenting this podcast, for the first time...
In the
31 years she's been alive. What happened last night, Catherine?
I beat my brother at tennis. I beat my brother at tennis.
I mean, really? Honestly, he's 6'5" tall.
He's adjusted it up. He's done a Karlovic. He says he's now 6'6".
He can actually play tennis. And Catherine beat him fairly and squarely.
The words he spluttered in defeat were, the really annoying thing is I was playing quite well.
Right, so how did you do it? Give us your match report.
I really did play the match of my life. At one point, I won a rally... won a point with a topspin lob over my 6'6" brother, and it drew spontaneous applause from some passing dog walkers.
No, it didn't.
It genuinely did. Genuinely did. And I'm worried that, you know, my life has peaked now and it's all downhill from
here.
Is there any better feeling than spontaneous applause from passing dog walkers?
If you don't believe us, just go and have a look at the Instagram or Facebook pages of the Tennis Podcast, and you have never seen happiness until you see the look
on
Catherine's
face. It is unbridled joy.
And her crushed brother in the background.
In the interest of full disclosure, I probably should reveal that we do play a form of the game where serving doesn't happen because he's 6'6" and he's got a monster serve and my serving is rubbish, so it just levels the playing field a little bit.
Well, I didn't know that before I went and brought it up. I mean,
it just speaks to the dominance of my ground strokes, David.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up eventually. I mean, I really knew nothing about that. I mean, to me, that renders the match null and void.
It's like, it would be like having to play Ivo Karlovic. It would be a non-starter. And I've ball toss issues. Anyway.
Right then, let's get on with the show. I mean,
I shouldn't. Nobody requested full disclosure. I should have just ploughed on.
You had my unfiltered respect until about 28
now,
seconds
now
ago.
Now it's filtered respect. I'll take it, though, David. I'll take it. Should we talk about some professional tennis players?
Real tennis players, yeah.
Unless you want to. Have you got any more railway-based questioning for me?
No,
we've got to actually talk about tennis now. We'll do that for a bit, and then we'll come back to some fun facts about UK railways.
We're going to talk about on-court coaching.
We are going to properly get into on-court coaching, because Simon Briggs has written a very interesting, some would say controversial, article about it, and we're going to use that as a sort of pole around which to dance our debate around. A pole vault.
It's
trying to be topical. It's not even April yet. Anyway, let's start off with, before we move on to Miami, which is obviously where the majority of the world's tennis news is coming from at the moment, we must talk about some breaking Andy Murray world number one news. Simon Briggs is out in Miami. He's been speaking to Jamie Murray. Now, the last information we had about Andy was that he had withdrawn from Miami with an unspecified right elbow injury. He then came down with flu in Miami, which delayed his return home. That's a separate thing. He seems to have recovered from the flu, but Simon Briggs has spoken to Jamie Murray, who's into the quarterfinals with Bruno Suarez out in Miami, and Jamie says that the injury is rather worse than we hoped, and it is actually a tear to the right elbow, and we're unsure exactly how long he'll be out for. I think he referenced hoping to be fit for Madrid. It sounds like Monte Carlo might be unlikely at the very least. Now, this is a more serious injury than we thought, isn't it, David?
Well, so what Simon actually said was the word in the locker room is that he may not be back until Madrid, and I think Simon was, he's spoken to a few people that he thinks may have a bit of an inside track on it. We certainly haven't had any sort of confirmation of that. We haven't even had confirmation that Andy Murray's not going to play Davis Cup, although that seems very unlikely at this stage. You know, he's had a rough run, really, hasn't he? Shingles that he had a couple of months ago or 6 weeks ago. He then had this elbow injury, which you can kind of trace when it happened, because he played in Indian Wells, then he lost. He was seen serving at about 10 p.m. at night on the main centre court in Indian Wells. Then he went to Miami and pulled out. And so it's around about that period, or maybe he was testing the serve at that point as a fitness test, you know.
And Jamie reported to Simon that it is on the serve, unsurprisingly, that the elbow injury is most affecting him.
He also had a bit of flu as well while he was in Miami, which apparently delayed his journey back to the UK, because obviously there's a Davis Cup quarterfinal in France just the week after Miami,
which just sounds like we're now going to lose.
Yeah, well,
let's be honest.
I mean,
no disrespect to Dan Evans, but we are probably going to lose.
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of players out for France as well. Gael Monfils is now out of that tie.
Yeah, but they've
too.
Got so many to come. I mean, they could lose five players and still have a really strong team.
True. Look, they're unquestionably favourites, but Kyle Edmund's best surface is clay. You know, he can do some damage on indoor clay, as far as I'm concerned. I think it is going to be a real stretch for Evans to win singles rubbers, certainly.
In his mind, he pretty much writes off the clay court season, doesn't he?
He certainly has in the past. I mean, last year he didn't play it at all. I mean, he just decided to play challengers. And so, you know, he's going to have to play clay court season this year.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We digress. This is about Andy Murray. I've somehow found a way to get conversation on, got David talking about Dan Evans, which is his favourite topic of conversation.
Fine
as our resident Solihull correspondent. But yes, on the subject of Andy Murray, it could all be really, really bad luck, and it does happen, and there is sort of a precedent for injuries and illnesses sort of snowballing in this kind of way when you're feeling a bit depleted, as he obviously has been with shingles and flu and all the rest of it. You're more susceptible to injury. It could be bad luck, but do you think any of this is symptomatic of the effort, the sheer gargantuan effort it required for him to haul himself up to the number one position at the end of last year? Do you think he is now feeling the effects of that?
Could well be. And there are clear parallels, at least on the surface, to be drawn with Novak Djokovic, who 12 months ago was going through his own 6 months like he'd never had before, where he was winning an incredible amount of matches. Okay, he had had it before, but he had to haul himself over the line, didn't he, at the French Open, and he hasn't been the same since. I mean, he's had some good results. He got to the final of the US Open, he's had final appearances to the O2, but it still has never really been the real Novak Djokovic. And he's also out of Miami with an elbow problem. So,
and we have far fewer details still about that elbow problem than we perhaps do now about Murray. So it could be a very interesting start to the clay court season.
Well, the whole year is just intriguing, isn't it? Because the two players that have dominated everything really for the past two or three years are just not really factors at the moment. Obviously, Murray's still number one in the world because of that points gap that he's built up. But that is going to catch up. I don't really take, frankly, too much notice of it, him being number one, because he doesn't feel like number one at the moment because he's not a factor. He's not even playing the sport. So, you know, he will have to rebuild. He'll have to rebuild his fitness, his confidence, his aura, I think, in the mind of the other players. I think he started this year with everybody looking at him and thinking, God, this guy just ran through brick walls at the end of last year. Djokovic did the same in the spring and early summer last year, and I think that gives you something in the bank for a while.
And it's alarming how quickly that aura can be eroded. It seems like this impenetrable force field sometimes when a player is in their absolute pomp. As you say, this time last year for Djokovic, players did look like they were walking onto the court three love down against him before they'd even started the warm-up. And in the blink of an eye, that can turn to players walking onto court thinking, this is my big opportunity to get a big scalp against a really top player.
I think part of it is the losses they sustain. I think Djokovic losing to Sam Querrey, even though he's a dangerous player with lots of power, I think a lot of players looked to that and thought, well, I've beaten Sam Querrey. And so, you know,
I feel like I could beat Sam Querrey at the moment, David.
Well, Catherine, you know, as long as serve's taken out of it, you know, you can beat anybody, apparently.
But I could probably beat Ivo Karlovic.
I tell you what,
in a non-serving contest.
If Roger Federer was forced to play left-handed with no serve, sitting down,
I'll take that.
I think you might.
I will take that.
Have a chance, but you know, I definitely think that makes people think, oh, you know, I've got a chance against this guy, and it's made this year very interesting. I mean, look, I don't wish injuries on any of these guys, and I feel sorry for Djokovic and Murray if they're suffering with elbow problems. That must be so frustrating to be otherwise okay and just not be able to use your racket arm. So. But what it has done is it's given Federer a little window, which, my goodness, he's jumped through.
A little window?
Yeah.
I mean,
and, you know,
it's looking like French doors at the moment.
So he's flying, and other players too. You know, there's an opportunity out there for a number of players to really make an impact this year.
There certainly is, and we're going to talk about a number of them over the course of the podcast. But first and foremost, without further ado, David, let's talk on-court coaching. You've been commentating for BT Sport on the WTA event in Miami, and yet again, on-court coaching is so in the spotlight, isn't it? For good and for bad, depending on your perspective. And Simon Briggs has written this article in The Telegraph, published today, online yesterday, where he's argued that it is, quote, a long and unrewarding gimmick that's sort of effectively been trialled by the WTA and has now been, he deems it to have failed and should be abandoned. And he cited several examples. I think the most glaring one of late is obviously what happened with Muguruza a couple of days ago in Miami, where there was quite an uncomfortable exchange with her coach, Sam Sumic, wasn't there, David?
There was. In short, she swore, allegedly, in his direction while he was sitting down.
Allegedly.
allegedly by Sam Sumic, who then came onto the court and certainly repeated that word in telling her never
so
to say...
So much alleged swearing.
And came onto the court and said, never say that again to me, you know, or, you know, that was the gist of it. She apologised. it was uncomfortable. They've had a few uncomfortable ones over the course of the last 12 months.
Can you imagine if Ivan Lendl came on and said to Andy Murray, if you ever say anything? Yeah, I absolutely would. Yeah, I am a fan. I'm not saying it doesn't give rise to some uncomfortable moments, and perhaps there should be some more specific rules and guidance in place with regard. I know you got a bit of grief about calling out the fact that the swearing was happening when the umpire couldn't pick up on it, but obviously it was completely audible on the TV mics, and we had Lauren Davis's coach was called on court in her first round Miami match, and the first thing he said was, "Can I take my shirt off? I'd quite like to get a tan." And of course that was picked up by the microphones, and it was just a joke,
there are unquestionably some issues with the whole thing. I've just spent the last hour having a little read up on the history of when it came in. It was 2008. Larry Scott was in power at the WTA at the time. He is a pretty innovative guy. He's now working in college sports in the States, and he's a really good operator in many ways. He brought this on board. He felt that it was going to open up the communications channels for spectators to get a real insight into what goes on. And, you look at other sports, boxing, they mic up the corner men talking to the boxers in between rounds. They do the same with the Formula One drivers. You can hear the exchanges between the driver and the pit lane. We've not got that in tennis until this came in. That just didn't exist. Now, it is.
And yet tennis has these built-in periods of reflection for the player where you see them sat at the change of ends. You get to sort of gaze into their eyes and you're aware that they have this minute and a half to chew over in their mind and what's happening out there. And yet it's so frustrating because you can't know what's going on.
And it is fascinating sometimes to hear the conversation. Sometimes it's alarming. There are occasionally moments where I think, I wish I hadn't heard that. I feel like I'm intruding, or I feel uncomfortable listening to it. It depends where you stand. There are so many issues with it. I think the most significant one for me is the fact that it is just not being taken up across the sport. So you have this situation where you get to the biggest tournaments in the world and the players can't do it. The whole of the men's game doesn't have it. And the question is, should the women's game have just ploughed through and said, "We're doing it," which is what they did, and hopefully everybody else will follow, but regardless, we're doing
personally, it. Personally, I applaud them for doing that, because they've just gone, "Well, we think this is a cool, good thing." In Steve Simon's words, the audience wants access. And they do. I'm actually surprised at how divided audience opinion is on it. I can understand why ex-players and those sorts of voices are often opposed to it, but I would expect audiences to be very much in favour.
Where do you stand on the fact or the view of many that this is not a good look for the women's game?
Okay, I'll tell you exactly where it's
constantly sitting down and inviting usually a male coach onto the court to tell them what to do.
Well, Simon Briggs brings up this topic. He says, "How about the anti-feminist image presented by women seeking mid-match guidance from coaches who are almost exclusively male?" For me, that's all about the lens of perspective. If you see women's tennis and tennis in general / the world through sort of a sexist lens, then that is how you will view that. You will view it as a sign of weakness that women are seeking help from men. Nobody views boxing in that way. Okay, you've got the slight, you have got the angle of it is almost exclusively male coaches. But then I would put that's just an entirely separate issue about we need more female coaches in women's tennis, in tennis in general, and that's a separate issue. It's all about the lens of perspective. There is nothing weak about, everybody has coaches. Everybody goes onto court with a game plan that they have devised with the help and guidance of others. And actually it's completely accepted that in modern tennis, the bigger you are, the better a player you are, the more your entourage expands, the more you seek counsel from others, that's not seen as a sign of weakness, seeking counsel from more and more other people. So the fact that you get it specifically during matches and in a way that can be heard from other people, I don't see that as remotely a sign of weakness. I think, yeah, that's all about your lens of perspective. There is a slight issue that we have in that we have Serena Williams. Well, she's not at the top of the sport at the moment, but for many, she's the de facto top of the sport. She will never do it. I haven't seen Angelique Kerber bring Torsten Belts on.
No, she does.
She doesn't do it very often, yeah, then.
She does do it, though, but I think it brings into view another issue with it, is that there is only a small part of the world's audience that can necessarily actually understand what's being said. You have to, if Torben Belts and Angelique Kerber are talking, you need to be a German speaker to understand what's going on. That's unsatisfactory for anybody who can't speak German. Now, you know, how many languages might you be able to translate? I know it's a problem, and there's a massive worldwide audience. To me, in an ideal world, you would have two things happening to hit the moment that I'd love to see, which is probably recording these exchanges and playing them in when you can, and turning them around very quickly and getting the best of them, and frankly not using them if they're not any good, if they're not interesting. I wouldn't use them, because sometimes you are sitting there as a commentator, for instance, and you're thinking, either my audience, certainly in the UK for instance, is going to be primarily English speakers, there are a lot of these conversations that we just don't understand unless one of the commentators or production staff can give us a bit of a translation. And the other thing is, you have the swearing, that sort of thing. Unless it's really bad, I don't mind. You can apologise. It was very uncomfortable with the coach of Pavlyuchenkova the other day, which is what caused the exchange, is that he was just coming on and swearing every other word in conversation, and it's just, come on. You just look silly, mate. Somebody needs to tell you. It's like you don't even know you're on TV. And so that's what caused that. But for me, if it was recorded, turned around very quickly with somebody who had an editorial eye on it, an ear on it, who was thinking, that's interesting, people would want to see that as part of the show's production here, that gives insight, well, let's have that in. You know, I don't want to stop it. I don't necessarily think it should just be open mic stuff, because you know, you get a lot of rubbish with the gems. There are a few gems that, as a commentator and as a spectator, I really want to know about the conversations that go on. But so I'd like it to be more selective, and I'd love to see some form of subtitles for languages that maybe the wider audience, and certainly the English-speaking audience, can't understand. I mean, maybe that's too much of an ask production-wise, but if the WTA, in their whole production of all of these tennis matches, were to plough money into that, how interesting could that be for people to understand and get an insight into what is going on out there?
I completely agree with all of those suggestions. Let's do it.
Right.
I really think those are all great suggestions. I think in principle it's a really good thing. It does need some refinement. It needs some more formality to it. The open mic thing and the just sometimes it... And I notice sometimes you have to register your coach. You have to sign in your coach and say, this is my coach this week. This is, you know, if I call for on-court coaching, this is the person that will be coming on. Well, sometimes a different person runs on to who they've registered. That happened with Heather Watson in Acapulco. She had registered her coach, JL, and the doubles player, Michael Venus, came running on. And it flustered me as a commentator, because I was thinking, it doesn't look like her coach, JL. That looks like somebody else that's quite... I recognise that bloke, but I can't put my finger on who he is. But I don't quite trust my... The graphic is saying it's JL. What do I do here? And it's all just sort of, you know, it's just not formalised enough. So I think a bit of editorial input and a bit of formalisation would go an awful long way. And we don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because there is something good here. Which
is it a problem, though, that the rest of the sport is not taking this up? The fact
absolutely,
that you get
but
to
I
the
think,
slams and it's not happening, and that the men's game have frankly shown no interest in doing it.
Yeah, but I think the answer to that is for the rest of the sport to do it, not for the WTA
and
to
that,
say.
But that gets to the bottom of the problem of one of the main problems of tennis, that there is no way of doing that. There are so many different factions with different interests, different opinions, different levels of power, and you are never going to bring them all together unless you all agree.
I know, and if I think about that too much, I'd just get depressed and start crying, David, because... Yeah, it would so infinitely improve our sport if there was more...
So if it's not going to happen, if they're not going to catch up and say, well, we'll do it as well, should women's tennis stop doing it?
No, because I think if they instituted all those changes suggested by Mr. David Law on the Tennis Podcast and really, really made it work the way I think it can work, I actually think... Why wouldn't the other elements, the other areas of the sport take notice and go, hang on a second, okay, we should be doing this?
So if you made it really good, then it would be so compelling that it would be impossible to ignore. Yeah, I know what you mean. A few viewers on Twitter at Tennis Podcast.
He's basically sneaky in a poll.
Well, I'll tell you, I really am, because I ran to on this as well. On Court Coaching, GB Tennis Tracker says, I love to watch it, but you have to feel it's an invasion of privacy. Okay, Richard Woodward says, I love it. Christine McKenzie says, I hate it, especially the gender stereotypes it fosters in the women's game.
Yeah, it does, but that's because of people that see gender stereotypes. We shouldn't change... Yeah.
I find that your response to that I find really interesting and quite... I'm quite pleased that you see it like that, because I can understand why people would reach that conclusion, but my response to it has always been... Well, what you're essentially saying is the fact that the men aren't doing it is your problem with this. Not the fact that the women are doing it. It's just the fact that it's only the women's game that are doing it. Well, that's not a reason in itself, on its own, just to say, right, well, this shouldn't be happening. That's my view. Rebecca says, I love it, and I hope to see it introduced to ATP events soon, maybe even the Slams. Matt Roberts, student Matt, our very own, says, I strongly dislike it. It is contrary to core tennis values, the individual problem solving of the sport. There are poor aesthetics involved, and it is permitted inconsistently. Very interesting. Student Matt. Catherine's just pondering on that, student Matt. Mary Carrillo is right up against it on Tennis Channel, and we love Mary Carrillo. We think she's brilliant, but on this occasion, we're not completely...
But ex-players generally are.
They are, and it's quite interesting. Martina Navratilova, who we've had on this show, who I've commentated with and talked to about this issue, said that when it first came on, she really liked the idea of on-court coaching. She was fully supportive of it, and she's changed her mind. She has started to not like... the fact that it isn't consistent across the sport, particularly with the slams, so that, and I do think that that is a problem for individual players. I think I saw Simona Halep last night, and she was really, really good. She did not have Darren Cahill come onto the court, and I believe he's made a conscious decision with her that I only come onto the court if it's really necessary, because I do not want you getting used to it.
Yeah, you don't want to come to rely on it.
That we come to a slam and you can't do it.
It's problematic, no doubt. I just think the response to that isn't to say, oh, we've had this really good idea that nobody else is taking notice of, so let's just do away with the good idea.
Should we have a poll vote on the subject? Let's do it. On court coaching, would you like tennis to A, stop groaning, would you like tennis to A, ban all match coaching, B, keep it as it is, C, edit on-court coaching for the best bits, which is my suggestion. Only 3% went with that.
Yeah, but they hadn't... This ridiculousness of pole vault. You can edit for the best bits. I mean, everybody's interpretation of that will be different.
Catherine's not happy with the whole pole vault, as you may well expect. And D, allow coaching from the stand, which is Steve Simon's suggestion. I mean, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
But he wants that in addition.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
Which I have to say, I don't agree with. That, for me, makes it more haphazard and less able to police it and formalise it. And I think that would be chaos, personally.
But on-court coaching, 58% of you want it banned altogether.
Yeah.
On-court coaching, which is very interesting. 660 votes on that. When coaches come on court, mic'd
up... How many of them were porn bots?
None of them. I don't think. Any of them were, Catherine Whittaker. When coaches come on court, mic'd up and swear, does it bother you? Does it bother you, Catherine Whittaker?
No, I mean, the odd swear word here and there. I think I agree. Pavlyuchenkova's coach took it too far. You know, I'm not remotely offended by swearing personally, but that's just your personal sensitivities, isn't it? So each to their own on that. Probably the safest thing is if there is a no swearing rule. And generally, I think if you're a good coach, you should probably be able to convey your message well without swearing.
Yes, probably should. Anyway, so that is pretty much the landscape as to on-court coaching. I mean, the WTA does not appear to be backing down for a second on this, and you know, I applaud their belief in their decision to go with this and to keep doing it. It does feel as though that we're going to be treading water for a while, and particularly unless, as we said, they really plough thought and investment into this and make it better, because at the moment it feels...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Like they're doing it, but they're not really doing it.
Yeah, they need to listen to the Tennis Podcast and take up all of our suggestions. That is... the answer. We'll talk about the men's a bit.
We're a bit up ourselves, aren't we?
We'll talk about the men's a bit in due course. I'm so buoyant, David, from yesterday that
right.
I'm just so darn pleased with myself. What else has been happening in Miami in terms of winning women's tennis other than swearing players and swearing coaches? Joe Konta, a couple of really grinding wins, but better form. Against
she
Pauline Parmentier.
Yesterday. Yeah, she was very good against Parmentier. She looked pretty ropey a couple of days earlier against Alexandra Sasnovich, and very similar to the loss she took in Indian Wells, where she just didn't seem to be completely trusting her game. But then Joe Jury pointed out it was really windy that day, and her game is built on that metronomic consistency, just powering these arrow-like ground strokes into the corners, and it's difficult to play that type of game in high wind. You know, you're not going to be as consistent. It is going to be more erratic.
She needs me for on-court coaching, because let me tell you, it was pretty windy yesterday and my arrow-like ground strokes did not suffer one bit, David.
Right.
I was just fine.
Okay. Just don't let the opponent serve, and that's all Joe Konta needs.
Just hit them so hard that they stay hit.
Right.
That's my advice.
Okay. Okay, so I'm not going to have my rematch with you. I really don't like the sound of the confidence coming across the table here. The gist of the match for Konta though yesterday was the fact that it wasn't windy, and she got herself back to normal form, really, and there was no contest after about 3-all. It was 6-4, 6-love. So she now faces Lara Arruabarrena, who beat Madison Keys last night, who had 10 break points in the first set, didn't take any of them, had a shoulder issue and had treatment for 8 minutes at the end of the set, and then lost in straight sets, and she just panicked in the end and started blasting all over the place. Just a small note as well, really upsetting to see after the match that within 2 minutes of the end of that match, Madison Keys let her Twitter followers in on a message that she'd received from somebody who follows her. I'm not going to repeat any of the words in that tweet. It was deeply disturbing, and that's the sort of thing that tennis players have every single time they play a match that they lose. They get abused online, and I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it'd be, you know, there's a part of me that thinks just block all of these people. Don't even go on social media if you're a tennis player.
But you can't block them all. You can't defeat internet stupid, David.
No, I understand, but I mean, you know, like I said, there's a part of me that thinks I wish she just didn't have an account, so she didn't have to be subjected or know about this kind of feeling out there.
Yeah, but that's letting them win.
Well,
isn't it?
And that's ultimately my conclusion to it as well. I applaud her for making everybody aware of the ugliness out there, and I personally did the tiny little bit that I could, which is to report that person, and it just disgusts me, frankly, and I think people don't realise, you know, yeah, it's a nice glamorous live tennis and all that sort of thing, but goodness me, there's some unpleasantness out there.
Yeah, there sure is. Simona Halep, she won last night, and I a good win for her also in round two over Naomi Osaka. That was tricky. Three sets, that one.
She looked really good.
She did, but I can't remember, as I was writing her into the agenda, I can't remember the last time I put her on a tennis podcast
agenda. She's not
done anything this year. She's not been in the conversation for a while,
again,
has she?
I wonder what. That's why I think maybe the building blocks of what Darren Cahill is trying to do is to get her to be just self-sufficient, to feel good on court without needing to rely on him too much. Last night, her focus, and she, you know, another advocate for freshness. She looked fresh out there, and I mean, yes, her opponent in terms of pedigree, Anett Kontaveit, is not in her class. She played really well. She qualified, won four matches, and played really well early on. But Halep looked the business last night, and she could be, if she stays in that sort of form, she's a match for anybody other than Serena at top four.
She should absolutely be in the conversation. It made me sad to realise that, you know, I'd just not really thought about her as a contender for these tournaments for a while, and she absolutely should be. Mirjana Lucic-Baroni, she absolutely blitzed Agnieszka Radwanska. Second time this year
she's done that. A rough year. Agnieszka Radwanska has done nothing so far this year. She got to the final of Sydney. She was beaten heavily by Jo Konta in that final. And that's, as you say, twice that Lucic-Baroni has beaten her very, very straightforwardly. 16 winners, 2 unforced errors. That's the level of performance that we're talking about.
Could she win a slam, David? We've talked so much about, you know, the fairy tale run in Australia. And I think we talked about that as sort of this wonderful moment in itself, rather than, you know, when a young player makes a run to a semi-final of the slam. It's all about the future and the potential, and wow, if that's what they're doing now, then, you know, any matter of time before they win one. Okay, you know, she doesn't have infinite time at 34 years of age, but I saw her in Acapulco and she was the best player by far that week. I mean, when she is on, she is unplayable.
She ended up having a stomach bug, didn't she?
She was sick for the final against Lucia Cerenko, semi-final against Lucia Cerenko, and had to retire at 4-love down or something like that. And it was such a shame. Such a shame.
Look,
she was
in answer to your question,
dominant
yes,
player.
There's no question. If things fell her way and she played her best tennis, she has such power that she could. I mean, I don't think she will, personally. I think you have to look at the odds, really, in terms of everybody else and all that sort of thing. So I think probably she won't win a Grand Slam tournament. But we've had so many strange or surprising results at least this year, not least 35 and 36 year olds getting to Grand Slam finals. And I mean, Venus Williams last night was absolutely brilliant. She looked 26, not 36. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting year in that way. There's such an open field, and yet you've still got all these big star names as well.
Yeah, but it seems to have just sort of shifted from these elder statesmen and women are having these wonderful runs and it's great to see, to actually these elder statesmen and women are sort of dominating tennis again. And, you know, I don't know anybody that's going to want to blame Mariana Lucic-Brony at Wimbledon. I include Serena Williams in that. I'm not saying I'd be backing Lucic-Brony against Serena Williams at Wimbledon, but nobody will want to play her.
The only thing I would say is Lucic-Brony has a game of very small margins because she is trying to hit winners basically off every shot, regardless of where it is, wherever she is on the court. That is a pretty low percentage game, and it all has to be working.
Yeah, when there's no plan B, there's not many, she doesn't grind out many victories. It's all, you know, but when she is on, it is something to behold. It is the sound that the ball makes coming off her racket. It is unbelievable. We have had a few more players this week. We're not going to go into the whole Sharapova debate again because we've done it so much, but there have been more players coming out against the Stuttgart wildcard and against her receiving wildcards in general. Dominika Sibulkova was pretty strong on it. Heather Watson spoke out against it, which I found interesting because she's an IMG client, as is Sharapova, and I think that's not insignificant because I don't know anything specific, but surely there would be sort of internal pressure from... Well, and we know there's sponsor...
I certainly think that they would prefer her not to speak out on the subject. I've tended to find with Heather, if you ask her a straight question, you get a straight answer. So that would be, you know, the reason for that, I would imagine, particularly after a defeat. I think players tend to be less guarded when they're obviously disappointed. I don't think they think about the consequences too much.
And Steve Simon, as a result, there's been so much speaking out now, specifically on the wildcard issue, which is what we're talking about here. There's been so much talk about it from really significant players at the top of the game that Steve Simon has said that nothing definite, no specifics, nothing, but he will at least contemplate the possibility of a rule change. He said it's something that needs to be looked at. So it is going to be interesting because it's really put in the spotlight.
That's in terms of an ability to have unlimited wild cards, isn't it, if offered, upon having had an anti-doping test violation.
Yeah, so that, as I say, we won't get into the whole debate, but that is rumbling on and it's not going anywhere because Stuttgart is it's just around the corner now. It is approaching quickly and it is going to be...
It's going to be a circus, is what it's going to be when we finally get there. And we'll just have to...
How many members of WTA communications staff do you think there will be in Stuttgart?
There'll be a lot of people there. Put it that way, there'll be a lot of journalists there, I tell you.
Do you think all the British papers will go, all the national correspondents? Do you think any...
I certainly think there will be certainly four or five, I would think, that would be there. And I wouldn't mind a bet that there will be news journalists there, people that do not cover tennis week in, week out, that are there for the day that Maria Sharapova returns, wanting to file their sort of pieces to camera, to have a presence there. It is a big story. That's a big sports news story.
And that alone, probably in the Stuttgart organisers' mind, justifies the wild card, doesn't it? I mean, that's the sort of promotion that they...
It's quite an interesting one. I listened to an interview with our friends at the NCR Tennis Podcast did with Markus Guntart, the tournament director in Stuttgart, somebody that I've known on the circuit for a long time. He was at pains to point out that the awarding of the wild card is due to the relationship that they've had with Sharapova over the years. She's obviously a Porsche-sponsored athlete as well, which is the title sponsor of that tournament. He was saying that we sell the tickets anyway, and look, I tell you what, when you see the tournament, it is one of the most impressively run tournaments on the circuit. Full house every single day. But the fact is, and he may not admit it, but there's no question that having Maria Sharapova in your tournament will get more eyeballs on that tennis tournament. Having her there in the first match back after a doping suspension will only multiply that. And, you know, it may be a bit uncomfortable to look at it like that. People may not want to admit it, but they're aware of it. Everybody's aware of the fact that this is a massive global news story, her return. And yeah, I think that there are people out there, and I'm not necessarily saying the tournament director is this person, but there will be some people out there that are rubbing their hands together over that.
Much like I was yesterday.
After your big victory, yes. What did you get for it? Did you get any prize money?
I can use that victory as a segue for anything.
It does appear to be that way.
That's what I'm now realising.
How is your brother dealing with it? What is he going to, you know?
He demanded that we play another set immediately. So he could rectify.
Is that why you left?
I agreed to it, but I demanded that the result not be recorded.
So what happened in that set?
I was leading, and then it...
Hold on a minute.
Demanded that the results would not be recorded, and if it goes in the tennis podcast, that is literally being recorded. Victoria Azarenka says she's coming back, David. She's planning to come back for the US Open series. I lost that set.
Hold on a minute. When you won the set that you did win, it was a full set, was it? What was the score in the set that you did win?
It's not relevant. Victoria Azarenka, she's got a new coach, David. And
I'm trying to get around how you actually won. Oh, I forget it. So Victoria Azarenka, yeah, she's coming back in the summer.
Full disclosure is overrated. She's planning on coming back for the US Open series, which would mean sort of post-Wimbledon, might see her in Washington maybe. It would be, where is the women's? The women's is Toronto this year, isn't it? Toronto and Cincinnati, basically, is what we're talking about. And she's got a new coach, former coach of Sharapova. It's exciting, isn't it? I would be excited at the prospect of her return.
Yeah, no question. And she sounds so excited herself. You know, this is a player who has been training hard in the time that she's had available to do so. And what was interesting as well was she was making very clear that she does not want to come back until physically she feels like all the bases are covered, that she has got herself to a condition that she can cope with the rigours of tennis again and the tour again. And I'm pleased to hear that. I'm pleased that she's not just going to rush back. I think she sometimes played tennis injured, really. There were times where she would have huge amounts of bandaging around a thigh or something like that, and you know, it's unsatisfactory to me to have one of the game's really top players, of which she was, just playing sort of lame. I'd rather not see a player take to the court in that condition.
And if freshness is the key to success, yeah, as it seems to be in 2017, boy, is she going to be fresh. Yeah. Well, maybe she won't be fresh because she's been up in the middle of the night with a baby,
but I suspect she
has a nanny to help with that.
Personally, I think she will be flying. If she can cope physically, I think she's going to be a force again very soon.
I think so too, and I think that will be great. I really, really think that will be a fantastic thing to see her back and, hopefully competing for major titles again in the men's side of things. What's been happening? We should say we're recording this on Monday late morning, early afternoon. Coming up later today is Federer against Del Potro, which is going to be fantastic.
Oh, yeah. What's going to happen in that?
I was going to not do predictions because it'll be completely out of date by the time everyone listens to this.
Humiliate ourselves.
I think Federer is going to win.
Yeah. I mean, I probably think he will too, but yeah. Very interesting.
But really interesting, yeah. They met 20 times.
Have they?
Yeah, that's more times.
15-5
is the head-to-head in Federer's favour.
Really?
But that was... I can't think of that many.
Federer on form would have the ability to rush Del Potro, who as powerful as he is and a good mover as he is for his size, you know, he doesn't have that feeling of explosiveness off the spot and ability to turn quickly in quite the same way that certain other players, well, Djokovic or somebody more lithe and light might have. So if Federer's on, he more than ever now, he can rush players, can't he? So that will probably be the deciding factor. But, you know, you never know with Juan Martín Del Potro.
In the last round, Federer beat Francis Tiafoe, who mustered, I thought, a really decent challenge against Federer, 7-6, 6-3, 7-6, 6-4. What did you make of Tiafoe? It's obviously not the first time we've seen him play, but first time I've seen him matched up against as good a player as Federer. I thought it was a real benchmark for him. I really like him. I hope he does make it to top 10. I think it's probably a bit early to say that he definitely can do that. I love the way he plays. The speed at which he can move his right arm is unbelievable. The disguise he gets on his shots, it's like a snake's tongue, the whip of that right arm. It's amazing. It's really amazing. Yeah. And the way he guides the backhand, it changes direction on the ball. He looks to me like somebody, he's bulked up very quickly, hasn't he? He was very, only a year ago, less than a year ago, he was very gangly. He'd grown to full height. I think he's 6'2" now, but still very gangly. And he really looks an impressive athletic specimen now, but it looks like it's happened very quickly and he's really still adjusting to that. Much like, you know, Alex Ferguson always used to beef up his players, didn't he? When they came into Old Trafford, they would sort of beef up over the course of a year. And sometimes they just looked a bit awkward as a result of that for a while. Yeah. And to me, there's an element to that. But if he can really grow into his body, I so hope he can do it.
He's good news for the sport, is Francis Tiafoe, in terms of he's so engaging, he's likable, he's non-stop talking. I mean, when we had him at Queen's last year, down in the player lounge, you never saw Francis Tiafoe not having a conversation with somebody. He just loves to spend time with people. He's a very gregarious character, it seems to me, and everybody appears to like him. Even Nick Kyrgios likes him. I mean, goodness sake. Francis Tiafoe is somebody you want to be a star because he's got so much to offer. I haven't seen enough of him on the court to form a really strong opinion yet. I mean, listening to certain coaches and commentators that have and whose opinion I would respect, that they think highly of him, but there isn't the feeling, the overwhelming feeling, that this is an absolute cast iron guarantee to be a top player. So jury's out for me a little. I think he'll be a top 50 player. I think he'll probably be higher than that. Whether he'll be much higher than that, I just don't know at this stage. I hope he will.
Yeah, I feel the same. I'm not willing to pin colours to the mast about sort of top 15, top 10, but I think top 20. Top 20. You've mentioned Nick Kyrgios. I know you want to talk about Nick Kyrgios. He's done first and foremost, he's playing Queens, which is great. He's pretty clear on the fact that he thinks he can win both Queens and Wimbledon, isn't he?
And I love
he's
that.
He's pretty unequivocal about
I,
that.
I
yeah.
love that. It's just nice for me. I mean, I know I'm his biggest fan in so many
David's
ways.
David's got his pom-poms out.
And I do love watching the guy play tennis. He amuses me.
So do
me.
I.
He,
so do
he
I.
does amuse me. He sometimes appalls me, but he does amuse me. And I think I like the openness. I like the fact that he's not afraid to say that he knows he's good and that he thinks if he plays really well, that he can beat everybody. And frankly, he's backing that
up.
Well,
he's right.
He's proving that.
Well, he's right, apart from we didn't get to see him play Federer last week.
No, but he has beaten him before. There is only Andy Murray that he has yet to beat, really, of all the top players. So I like, he did this Q&A on Twitter last night. He was asked goodness knows how many questions about his expectations, his thoughts on basketball and tennis and football and everything. And I just like the fact that he seems so utterly unguarded and, you know, no filter works for me most of the time.
Yeah, there's definitely no filter when you're using third person self-referential hashtags like #FineNK and #NKRising, is there?
Well,
that's my issue. I just can't. I've got no truck with that. I can't.
Okay, hold on
just,
a minute. You know,
I love watching him play tennis. In many ways, I really like the bloke. I found the Twitter Q&A very entertaining. But #NKRising is not something I can get on board with, nor can I get on board with MK Nation, go forth and burn this shade thrower. MK Nation.
Yeah, go on, MK Nation.
I think that's a reference to his fan base.
Yeah, it is.
So you are a member of the MK Nation, David. Congratulations.
No,
yes,
not,
you are.
I'm not that, but... You know, I don't. It doesn't bother me in the slightest, to be honest, because I think he's playful. I think he's just messing around most of the time.
He is thoroughly entertaining. He's playing Ivo Karlovic tonight.
Yeah, I think that could drive him to distraction.
Yeah, that could be really interesting.
Yeah, but then
dim
again,
the on-court microphones for that one. On-court coaching or not?
It's also the sort of match that I think will just have him highly tuned in. I think he'll be ready for it. He was against Feliciano Lopez at Wimbledon last year. I think he'll be desperate to show that he can return that serve.
Well, I hope that's the only way he's going to win it, because you have to be highly tuned in against Karlovic, because what, you'll get one or two opportunities per set
I think his return of serve is pretty good. You know, he's got that short backswing on the backhand. He's beaten Milos Raonic a number of times now. I think he's quite good at blocking and stabbing and making the ball back over the net.
Yeah, let's move on, because this will be out of date by the time. I think he probably will win, but it could go wrong. You've mentioned Raonic. He's injured again, David. Hamstring, poor bloke.
Yeah, terrible shame.
It's not good, is
terrible
it?
Shame for Milos Raonic. This is something that keeps happening to him, and it's the thing that people like Andy Murray are going to have to watch out for in their return from injury. It's not that easy. How do you replicate the stresses and strains of a high octane tennis match? It's not easy. So,
well, you ask Roger Federer for tips. That's what you do about how to come back from injury. David's given me the wrap-up signal. This is not the first time David Law has done this.
What I would point out,
David, if you hadn't have snuck in pole vault, we'd be bang on time. So
imagine if we'd have removed every reference to your wins.
We've still got to talk about... I've just got two more things, David, if you don't mind. Grigor Dimitrov, what's he playing at? Had such a great year. He's just lost to Guido Pella.
Yeah.
And I said Guido Pella in the same way Nick Kyrgios did in Madrid last year.
You did.
Guido Pella.
I mean, you of all people, at least Nick Kyrgios has got the goods to be able to say that. What have you got?
I've become a monster.
She's won
since
one
yesterday.
Tennis match,
become
and now she's
monster.
Happy to dismiss Argentina's top five
Come
player.
On, though. Come on. So, lost to Jack Sock last week. Okay, Sock reached the semi-finals, and it was a tough three-setter, but he would have wanted to do a lot better, Dimitrov.
Yeah, he would have done. I think it... Partially, I mean, it shows how great the really top players are, that they keep on churning out the results. You know, the assumption is, and I'm guilty of it too, is that Grigor Dimitrov and Coco Vandeweghe get to the semi-finals of the Australian Open and will just carry on doing that. They've won one match between them over the course of Indian Wells and Miami. It's not that easy. And also, I think there's also an assumption that the conditions in Australia will be the same in Indian Wells and Miami, because they're on a hard court in a hot country. The three tournaments are totally different in terms of feel, it would appear, and they were unable to make the necessary adjustments. I don't really know why I didn't watch those matches, but yeah.
Well, the good news for Dimitrov is he is approaching a portion of the season where he has literally nothing to defend, because it's almost exactly a year ago since the ignominy of the Istanbul final, followed by the seven consecutive losses. So, he's going to be...
Silver lining.
Not under pressure on the clay, let's put it that way. And I suspect, I don't know, but my guess is he's not going back to Istanbul to defend those points.
I think he'd be quite happy to. I have no idea, but... Yeah.
We wish you well, Grigor. We wish you well going forth onto the clay. Hashtag GD Army. And finally, David, I think it's safe to say if there was a GD Army, we would be in that, wouldn't we? Anyway, maybe we are the GD Army. Finally, David, Dominic Thiem.
Yeah.
Dominic Thiem.
Well, he lost, didn't he? He lost a match against...
He was woful.
Who was it? Basically?
Borna Coric. I mean, Coric. Good win for Coric,
well.
And he needs good wins,
yeah.
Coric.
He does.
Because he's a bit of a forgotten member of the hashtag next gen. But Dominic Thiem...
You've
seen the racket smash, presumably.
I have. It was magnificent. If you haven't seen it, do search for Dominic Thiem's latest racket smash. And he made sure with about four hammers into the ground. And I've never seen a racket look quite like that when it's finished. I'm kind of saying it's fun, but I probably shouldn't. So I think that we should not pay any attention to Dominic Thiem's loss. I think you've got to give it 6 months. you've got to, you cannot judge it. I mean, are you going to judge everybody else then on their early round losses?
No.
Now, why pick out Dominic Thiem? Grigor Dimitrov lost, has won one match in Miami and Indian Wells. That's less than Dominic Thiem. Why pick on Dominic Thiem?
Yeah, fine, okay.
So give him 6 months.
That's the end of the tennis podcast then, isn't it?
Yeah.
This has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport from Great Britain's busiest...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Railway Station. We'll be back soon.